Welcome to the Kinda Okay podcast, where we talk about things that aren't okay in hopes of making them feel more okay. I'm Sarah Crossley, creator of It's Kinda Okay Comics and the Growing Pains Zine, an independent publication made by rad women and non-binary creatives. Issue 7 of Growing Pains is finally out. The theme for this issue is getting intimate, and it's available online at itskindaokay.com. Because things are a little bit funny in terms of shops and markets at the moment, this issue sparked a new way of getting the zine out into the world. With your online purchase, you're now able to print 2 copies of this issue, one for you and one for a friend. Additional print tickets are also available. If you're a Definitely Okay patron over at patreon.com/kindaokay, then you'll have free access to issue 7 until July 31st. Find out the details of submitting content to Issue 8, check the back page of Issue 7. A huge thank you to all the content contributors and a big thank you to the Patreon people for making it possible to create the zine and run a website. You beans are weird and wonderful, and your support means the world to me. Okay, so today I am pleased to introduce you to one of my oldest friends, an extraordinary painter and art teacher in Toronto, Ontario, and an all-around powerful, strong, and hilarious gem of a human, Shannon Lee McDonald. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
How are you doing? Actually, I should rephrase that. What's kind of okay for you today?
Kind of okay. I feel just a general feeling of kind of okay. It's kind of a rainy day here in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm feeling it's like a glass half empty, glass half full kind of feeling. I feel a little tired, a little exhausted. I'm going to be heading back to work at the end of the week. So there's a feeling of kind of like excitement, but also of like impending doom. I'm feeling, that's the general feeling. A little bit of ooh, but a little bit of ooh.
I like that. I'm breaking it right down to sound effects of being.
Sometimes that's the best way. That's 90% of my teaching method.
Can you tell your listeners in your own words what you do?
I teach people of all ages about art, how to make it, a little bit of art history. I'm an art educator. I teach in studios. I also do private lessons. And in my own good time, I make art. I do lots of paintings, lots of drawings, and I recently started getting into doing a little bit more pottery and ceramics. And I'm a big ol' nerd in my spare time.
You've been going through some fairly like deep personal reflections lately that we've talked about a little previously. Are you open to sharing a little bit of what you've been kind of dealing with?
Of course. I mean, haven't we all been going through periods of self-reflection? Especially considering like the past couple months where everybody's stuck indoors with their families or by themselves. Me personally, because I live by myself primarily, it's just been a lot of kind of self-reflection and realizations about sort of different parts of my past, different parts of who I am, like what I've carried from my past into my present that affects who I am and how I interact with the world around me. I've been doing a lot of unpacking, as they say. with all of my grocery bags of stuff from the past. Mental, not so much physical, maybe a little physical. I've been trying to do a little bit of cleaning as well. But most specifically, I've been kind of going through like past traumas, I guess, and how I've kind of let these moments in my past where I felt like the most hurt or the most embarrassed or ashamed sort of sort of work their way into my adult life. Because a lot of it's like stuff that was in my past and things that I experienced as a kid or a teenager. And I'm kind of realizing how a lot of these things, like to sort of keep thinking about it over and over again, or to kind of cling to these ideologies, is not healthy or productive for me as an adult. So I've been doing a bit of mental spring cleaning, so to speak.
That sounds really difficult to be going through, but at the same time, like really important for like your, you know, sense of being as a being now. I think so much like when we're kids, we just like, that's a future Shannon problem. Like, I'll just deal with that later. And you're like, shit, now I'm future Shannon. Cool.
Yeah, future Shannon is here now. She always has been. Like, that's the thing that I never really acknowledged or cared about, was that there is no mysterious future Shannon that present Shannon isn't going to have to deal with. The consciousness that I am right now is going to be, give or take some stuff, like moderately the same human being that's going to have to deal with, I don't know, Shannon things at 40 or 50 or 60 or however long. Like, there is no kind of sweeping it under the rug and dealing with it later. Like, I don't even think, like, when I, like, half the things that I'm thinking of, like, especially in my relationships to other people and being perceived by other people, I don't even think I was like actively thinking like, oh, like I'm going to refer to this every time I am faced with confrontation at work, or every time that I'm in a social situation and I don't have anyone to talk to. Like, do I try and make a friend? Like, maybe they'll be ridiculed. Like, I didn't actively think that that was going to like wedge its way into my consciousness, but through like enough social interactions and like, I was also thinking about this because we had talks earlier this week, I think, but a lot of media consumption that I had at a young age kind of reinforced what I was experiencing. In particular, what I'm thinking of is how I related to other kids. I've had kind of a bad string of luck of making friends with people that do not have my best intentions at heart. Present company obviously excluded, because we've been friends for like plus 10 years. But there's been like a couple people that have that I got really, really attached to, and then they just like either completely 360 changed and decided not to be my friend, or started being very mean or cruel. Or for whatever reason, it just suddenly flipped. And suddenly I was left with the feeling of like, oh, like, what did I do? Was it wrong? Like, trying to like analyze what behavior happened that led to this decision. And I don't know. I just clung to it over and over again because it seemed to keep happening. Mm. And I feel like a lot of those experiences happened with people that were sort of different than me. Like, I think we were planning on talking about this a bit later, but like being categorized as like weird or other, in whatever sense that term means, like, especially when it comes to media consumption, I found that I would be relating to the strange, quirky characters on TV that like had weird little habits or were like the tomboy character. And it was always that weird dynamic, especially in kids' shows, like especially in like kids' shows where there's dynamics between girls, is you kind of have this like super feminine, like kind of girly girl image that's being pitted against the like quirky tomboy, more masculine, like weird girl image. Weird. Being a boy is weird. Like, why is that a thing? Anyways, so I found myself in, or at least placing myself in the category of the latter. And I found that that shaped a lot of my interactions with people that I perceived to be in the ultra feminine, like different than me. Like, yeah. In terms of, I don't know how to explain it, like gender ideology.
Gender stereotypes, or like, I mean, what we, for some reason, humans seem to make sense of the world by putting labels on stuff, as if like being a tomboy or being ultra feminine like wasn't a fluid thing. Like, one day you can feel one way and the next day you can feel a different way. And exactly. For some reason, our brain is just like, can't compute.
Must be one or the other.
Don't understand gray areas. Must fit into one of these two categories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that like we really struggle with as kids, like trying to wrap our heads around like, okay, but like, where do I fit in the mm-hmm. world? I mean, like when we're kids, like the whole world is so new and we're just trying to make sense of everything. What moments in your life have really, you know, kind of define like the woman that you are now?
You see, I thought about this question earlier. I still don't know the answer. Like, I don't think that there were definitive moments. I think there's a bunch of little things that life is a choose your own adventure. You hit certain points and you can go either way. I feel like a lot of who I am being shaped by the mentors that I experienced that were very positive. Being a teacher myself, not in the public school system, but in sort of like private systems, I remember and I appreciate so much the teachers that I had that were patient, that were realistic and pragmatic with me. A lot of my teaching methods that I use in the studio, I try my best, but being a human being, if I mess up or if I make a mistake, I'm not going to be above apologizing or being like, whoops, made a mistake there, because they're like, you're shaped by the good and you're shaped by the bad as well. I, as much as I remember all of the really amazing teachers that were like so kind and so empathetic, I also remember teachers that I had that were kind of scary sometimes, especially the ones that I had when I was really young. And I remember them being really stern and angry all of the time. And I understand that like not every day is going to be spectacular. Like sometimes you just have a terrible mood, or you butt heads with a kid that for whatever reason you just don't get along. Like they're small, but it's almost like the same when you are an adult. And you meet someone and you're like, this isn't not going to be pleasant. Okay. And you just kind of got to like work your way through it. Like, I understand that that happens, but in terms of the things that shaped me, like, I remember people, adults, that would never apologize for their actions, that would never admit to making mistakes. And I realize there has to be a balance between being like relatable. Oh, we're just like, we're the same. You're just a lot smaller and new. And being like, okay, I'm an authority figure. Like, please stop running around. You need to sit down. Like, there has to be a balance between the two, but I don't think it has to turn into this weird, like, authoritative dictatorship where there's no leeway and you're like, there's a quote from Matilda with Danny DeVito where he's like, I'm big, you're little, I'm right, you're wrong, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I felt like some of those early experiences with kind of prickly teachers had that underlying mentality of like, because I said so, no, stop asking questions.
Yeah, it kind of kills the conversation. Because then you're just like, oh, well, yeah, I'm just not going to share stuff. And if that's going to be be the reaction to it.
Like, a lot of who I am, it's so hard to pick that apart. Like, I've always really, really enjoyed, like, arts and culture. So from a very young age, like, my mom randomly bought me an issue of Teen Vogue before Teen Vogue was like super political and like amazing and getting youth involved in like their local governments and taking action against injustice, like, which is amazing. It was just like kind of shiny and fun. And I remember getting this issue that had a cover with this really beautiful woman with very intense eyebrows. I think her name was Camilla Bell or Camellia Bell. But anyway, inside were these beautiful editorials and all of these like amazing clothes that were like way too expensive because they're all fancy designers. But I remember seeing that and just the magpie in me went off and being like, oh, shiny. Like, want the shiny. And then I'm like, the shiny is too expensive. And then I sort of, through the age of the internet, discovered like, oh, you can go to like thrift stores, or you can like mix and match things from different stores. Like, you don't have to shop all at the same store. Oh my God. And then expressing myself through how I dressed and how I presented myself became this really fun outlet of sort of choosing my own adventure of who I wanted to be on a day-to-day basis. And it became this really fun thing, like, much to my parents' chagrin, because I know that some of my wardrobe choices, to them, their very conservative taste, was a little questionable. But I remember feeling like so good about myself in like my strange like hodgepodge of outfits that I would put together. And that the phase that I went through in high school where I just would wear high heels every day. And so I would be like, oh God, like 6'4" clomping down the hallway with like, I was like, yes, move out of the way, everybody. I am enormous. I think that was when I stopped caring.
That sounds like a pretty defining moment, if you ask me. That's really interesting in how it relates to what we were just talking about how people perceive you and having a little bit of control over that and a little bit of control over your own narrative. And I feel like being able to express yourself in those ways and finding those avenues of being an individual and, like, you know, really separating yourself in a positive way, it's just really interesting, because then you're controlling how people perceive you through at least a physical appearance.
Yeah, I know for, I felt like I jumped around a lot in terms of how I thought I was perceived or something. Like when I was very, very young, I would be friends with like lots of people, but I was very, very quiet and very passive, and I wasn't like an instigator. I wouldn't be choosing the games that we played. It would always be someone else. And I never really had like a voice to speak up and say like, oh guys, we should do this. Even like at home with like, if I was playing with my brother before it like collapsed into tears over us fighting over something, or somebody accidentally, like if we're sword fighting, we like hit each other's fingers and then I'm still crying. But before it was that, I never really got a say, or at least that's how I'm remembering it. Who knows? Maybe it's the exact opposite of what I remember. But I distinctly remember in grade, I think it was grade 6, 7, and 8, when I kind of broke away from, not even that I broke away, I just kind of slipped out. Nobody noticed I left. And then I started hanging out with some like people that were perceived as like a little bit nerdier. Which, okay, like, who cares? You want to talk about defining moments? Okay. So there was a weird little Halloween dance or something. I can't remember what grade it was. I want to say grade 4, maybe 5. And everybody was told to pick a song to go on, like, the class playlist. And I chose... No, I wasn't that cool. I wasn't that cool yet. Because a lot of my taste at that point in time was still defined by what my parents exposed me to. So I chose this cover song that Rod Stewart did of an old 1940s like slow dance.
Moonlight and love songs never out of date. Hearts full of passion. Woman needs a man, and man must have his mate, that no one can deny.
And I remember it coming on and being like, oh God, oh God, like, what have I done? And like, I think that was a weird moment for me, because all of the other songs up until that point had been like dance pop, top 20s, like kind of like what you would expect to hear on the radio, what I guess their families listen to. My parents have always been fans of like historical fiction. They love like things relating around World War II and Murdoch mystery. People are like, who likes that stuff? My parents do. And I was like fed that from a very early age. So I liked it. I still do like it to a certain degree. Maybe not the Rod Stewart cover though. But that kind of like old timey, like big band swing stuff. Like I got back into that like in my later years. So that moment of like, oh crap, like not everybody listens to that. Okay, let's just hide that. not talk about that ever again. And things like Monty Python and like these strange little like niche pockets. Like my parents were really into British comedy and like Fawlty Towers and that, and nobody knew what I was talking about. But my new pack of friends knew what I was talking about. I'm like, yeah, guys, like let's watch the Holy Grail for the 12th time in a row. Like to the point where we could like spew it off by heart. But the what I'm getting at, I'm sorry, I ramble so much. this is the classic like spider story of like, we're going over here, but first we need to hit here, 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 and here. Anyway, what I'm trying to get at was from my earlier childhood where I felt like I couldn't really show the things I liked because that was perceived as strange and they didn't know what I was talking about. So it's weird and not funny and not cool. To being in my preteens and having all these like super nerdy interests, like being into My Chemical Romance and watching anime and like wearing a lot of eyeliner. Like there was a point and I remember my friend Katie bringing it up. She's like, yeah, you used to sneak makeup to school and like put makeup on in the girls' bathroom, which I had no idea. The folks today that are doing makeup have it so lucky with all these online tutorials and these like cool Instagram and like people that are like influencers that are like, this is how you find your perfect foundation shade. You didn't know. You went and you got that dream matte foundation. You smeared it on with your hands. Like, oh man. Like, but I wanted to do it anyway. Cause I'm like, no, like I want to wear makeup. I want to express myself in a way. And then I would have to try and take it off by the end of the day so that I didn't get shit from my mom for stealing her makeup. And then eventually in high school, like I still had kind of that when I met you. Like we were both kind of like into anime and had kind of like nerdier interests.
Shannon and I used to be part of a group that we self-proclaimed the Nerd Herd.
Yeah, the Hallway Dwellers. And I feel like a lot of that, like being in the big air quotes nerd herd, a lot of that was self-imposed, I feel, because it reached a certain point where I'm like, I feel like I don't fit in anymore. Like I felt othered from the other and I'm like, shit, well, where do I go now? And going back to media consumption, like the idea of like having these two like feminine binaries of like either being super femme or like having kind of more masculine tomboy, like weird quirky girl traits. And that affected my perception of anybody that I felt like was in that first category of being hyper femme. And I feel like I cut myself off from so many people because I was like, oh no, like they're just gonna think that I'm weird and make fun of me or ridicule me or exclude me. And I didn't even give them the chance. Like, I know I had a couple friends that went to different schools that I knew through swimming. And they were like feminine girly girls. I remember my one friend got me like hooked on the OC and I like dragged my nails for the first couple episodes where I'm like, oh my God, like this, like I kind of like moaned about it a whole bunch. And then I was like, wait, I actually love this.
It's so funny, like this. I mean, I hope that it's changing now for women growing up because there is so much more representation of the variety of women that can exist in the world instead of these binary categories. But yeah, like I have straight up said, like, I'm not like other girls.
Oh, so many times.
Just this idea that like you're a different, you know, type of being.
That's the female equivalent of being like, I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm not like those regular guys. I'm a nice guy. Like,
you're still probably
not as nice as you think.
Yeah, and you're probably not as other as you think. No. That's the thing. And, like, they're probably not as, you know, like, not weird. Like, we go through life thinking other people aren't weird, and it's like, everybody's weird. Some people everybody's just, like, weird. Bria a little bit better. How do you think what we consume in terms of media affects us when we're younger and affects that idea of how we want to be perceived by others?
Like how what we consume sort of helps shape us kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, do you think that we can only really find ourselves through examples that we see and consume and representation that we're given?
I feel like it plays a huge part. I have upstairs neighbors, guys. I feel like it plays a huge, huge part because without representation and what we see on TV sort of showing us a blueprint or a guideline of things to do, is we have trial and error as the alternative. So like in social situations, I found that for a while I had this like weird default of thinking that I had to be funny or like, I don't know. Like I can remember for like my early, late teens, like early 20s, sort of young adult adolescence, of sort of hanging back. You know, a lot of what I learned in terms of like how to be is based on environment and who I surround myself with. Because like if I took the friends I had in OCAD, compare them with the friends that I had in Oshawa, compared to the friends I have now in Toronto post-grad, like there's different ways of being and different ways of acting, and it all comes down to, do you feel happier and more authentic as yourself? Depending on who you're surrounding yourself with. Do you, like with certain people from OCAD, I felt like I did have to put on kind of like a facade or have to come across as either super intelligent or super cool or chill or whatever that means. Or yeah, like I remember just kind of almost like stepping back, being very quiet, observing everything, like how people are interacting, the phrases and words and terminology that they use, and kind of like cataloging that in my brain, being kind of like, okay, like I'm watching all this go down, I'm seeing what is socially acceptable. And then after a little bit, kind of going back in and being like, oh, like this is how I can be, this is how I act. And I was never really conscious of it until the friend of an ex-partner pointed it out and was like, oh, like I had no idea that you were like this. I totally thought you were just like kind of quiet.
Quiet's like, not a word that I think I would
really
ever choose to describe you as.
I don't, yeah. Like I wasn't consciously doing it. But I never even noticed it until someone pointed it out.
It's a survival instinct.
It is. It is a survival tactic of kind of gauging the crowd to see what kind of material you can throw out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you found the same way, especially with, because you and I went to the same school at different times.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of that's like the basis of phases, right?
Yeah.
Like going through phases as a young adult is because you're exposed to certain things or you're hanging around certain people and you're like, oh, okay. So like either these things are acceptable or these are things that like I admire in another person. How do I assimilate? Like, how do I then absorb those things and, you know, spit them out as if they were my own? Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from media consumption, but it also comes from the people that we surround ourselves with, the ideas that we adopt that maybe aren't our own, that come from other friends or family or partners or whatever. And like the longer you live, the more you can look back and be like, that wasn't okay. And like, I don't know why I had to try and squeeze myself into this, you know, version of myself that exactly just wasn't authentic. And, you know, trying to shape ourselves in a way that make us more acceptable, more digestible. Amidst that weirdness and that feeling of very white, very privileged otherness in our cases. But yeah, that feeling of being separate. And I definitely feel sad for my younger self at how much time I spent judging others and therefore judging myself and not just being like, cool, like you like putting on makeup or like, you know, you like doing these certain things or you don't like that. Like, I don't know. I think we try and fit into these boxes because we like having things labeled.
Yeah.
And we like being liked by other people. And so we kind of contort, and I don't know if this is just women or if it's men as well, because I only have my own experience to go off of. But I think as women, we're taught that there can only be one woman in the room from a very young age. And so we're constantly trying to like outdo each other or, you know, just making sure that like we're the cool one. And that, you know,
there's an inherent like competitiveness almost.
Yeah. And that can be really toxic and something that you really have to unlearn as you get older, because it can limit your experience and limit your exposure to to new and interesting things.
Yeah. I always felt like I had a very hard time connecting with other girls. A lot of times because I was kind of scared and intimidated by them, but then that would kind of manifest itself in this like, oh, they're like super girly girls. And like, who was I to judge them? Like, who gives a crap? Like, kind of being scared and admitting that you're scared is kind of like one step to being like, kind of like, okay, like I'm nervous because I don't know what they're going to think of me. And I think that they're like really pretty or like really cool, but that's no reason not to like try and make a connection. And I'm like, I acknowledge that like cool people are intimidating.
Yeah, man.
But like that the coolness is like the exterior front. Like you're not actually seeing the person who they are behind all of that stuff. Like everybody has like weird squishy bits that are vulnerable and scared and sad and are dealing with their own trauma and their own bullshit. So like you don't like it's not cool to get away with just judging someone based entirely on their sort of public persona, like who they present themselves to or like how they are perceived.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, like, how do we peel back the layers? Because as you're talking and I'm thinking, I'm like, it's really interesting because I never felt that way with you.
I never felt that way with you either.
So what then creates that experience where there was never this, like, she's really cool, I'm not sure if she'll like me. Like, there just wasn't that.
It was very strange. Because I, to this day, can, like, remember the moment I decided I wanted to be your friend. I've probably told you this story before, like, a bajillion times. No?
I haven't? I don't know.
Oh my gosh, story time! Okay. So it was in grade 9 science class. And we sat at the back of the room, and your desk was beside my desk. And you always brought your sketchbook to school and I could see you drawing anime and I'm like, oh, she's really good at drawing anime. I'm like, I also like drawing anime. And then I started to bring my sketchbook. Your sketchbook was bigger than my sketchbook, so I was like, but I started bringing my book to school and like doodling in between classes or like sketching in the hallway. And then one science class, I was like, oh, you're really good. And you're like, thanks. And I'm like, wait, what are you drawing? And you were like drawing some like cat girl something or other. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'm like, do you want to switch sketchbooks? Would that be okay? And like, so we could look through each other's art. And we did. And I was like, oh my gosh. I also remember when someone like brought you around at lunchtime. I was sitting in the hallway with someone else. And I remember you like some very social butterfly like came around and was like, blah, 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 this is Sarah. And I'm like, hi. And you're like, hello. And then that was when I first physically saw you, I think. And then we had science class together.
Wow.
But I remember us connecting over art, and it never felt like, oh, she's like so much better than me. It was never like an angry thing. It was always a like, oh, she's doing really cool stuff. I looked up to you, man.
That's really lovely. And like in my brain, I'm like, man, like I didn't show my sketchbook to anyone.
Yeah, we trained so sketchbooks, man.
To have that honesty and vulnerability and openness from like, from the get-go is,
yeah,
like, I don't know, I guess like I always just felt like I could be my whole self with you, which is really nice.
Yeah sometimes you just feel that.
Yeah,
like I know that there's one friend that I made at OCAD. I forget, maybe you met TJ briefly. But this is a human being whom from the moment he spoke to me, I'm like, whoa, I guess we're friends now. Okay.
I love that deciding moment where you're like, we're going to be friends.
But when it does, it's kind of like this like exciting, like, yeah, do it. And even like when my old roommate, Lucia, like, I remember being super stressed out and coming into school, like, because I had been thinking at that point, like, man, like, I want to move in closer to school. I want to be out on my own. And I came in and I was like, just announced to the room. I was like, does anybody have a room for rent? Anybody? And she was sitting beside me and she had her little like little color-coded agenda, and she's like, oh, like my roommate's like looking to move out and she wants someone to sublet, so maybe you can move in. And I like quickly like went through the like Rolodex of what I know of her in my brain. I'm like, she's really nice, she's really smart, she's really studious, she wears cool clothes, yes. And then I like exchanged information with her. Like, it's funny because we both went through our own transformations, like, as we progressed through university. But to this day, I just, like, it's like an unconditional loving of this girl. Just the same unconditional love I feel for you. Where I'm just like, man, we could be, like, across the world, and I know that I can still send you a message, and we can just talk, and it's fine. Yeah. Like, it's really nice seeing that. And I don't know where that comes from. Like, that's kind of a special magic of making a friend that doesn't happen quite so often anymore now that we're older. But when it does, like, it feels special because I know how rare it is and how that kind of like, okay, cool, like, you're a person that, like, if I see you, I can go and talk to you, and it's fine. Whereas I feel like some of the other people that you might not have such an instant connection with, there's all these layers of uncertainty of, like, oh, like, I think there's, like, a couple memes that are floating around of, like, showing people who you are on the surface and showing them the true freak show that lies within! But like, you have to like let the layers off slowly. You can't just like be like, ha, here I am. But like with friendships like you or Lucia or TJ, I feel like I can just lay my soul bare and just be like, here's all of my shit. Take it. This is me.
Yeah, there's something freeing about that. And I mean, it's something like I genuinely think gets easier the more that you practice it, like taking mm-hmm. elements from those relationships and like bringing them forth in other aspects. Because
for sure,
you know, it's a little bit of self-protection. It's a little bit of self-doubt in there, self-consciousness that kind of restricts our ability to, you know, be our whole loud selves mm-hmm. right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And I think like somehow we kind of want to save that a little bit. We're like, oh, like it's actually a very vulnerable thing to put your whole self out there. Mm-hmm. And it's exhausting if you, you know, are trying to do it with everyone. So we have to select certain people.
Here's the part of the podcast where I would usually advertise my own artwork and comics, but it's actually a really good time for you to pause this episode and take some time to donate to a Black-led charity, learn about racism and how to dismantle the system, or contact your local government to address diversity issues in your community. Feel free to pause this podcast now, and if you're white, take some time to do the work. If you're someone whose experience with racism is firsthand, go do something to take care of your well-being in this moment. Don't worry, we'll be here when you get back.
Talking about that, talking about like your different influences, how do you think, you know, our consumption of content either on the internet or from friends influences your creative flow?
I feel super inspired by the stuff that I see online. Like, especially considering the alternative of like, oh, what you see in real life. Like, I feel like 90% of the media that I consume is for aesthetic purposes. Like, I like how it looks. I like the feeling that it gives me. And that has been my fuel for so long. Like, even before when I was talking about Teen Vogue, like, the editorials were works of art. They were the storytelling and the colors and the lighting, everything in it was this like beautiful, giving you like a time, a place, a moment. And I love art that does that, whether it's music or movies or art, illustration, painting, what have you. It has to reach into my soul and grab a little bit of something that brings me back. It's kind of like when you smell something that reminds you of a person or of like a certain moment, and you just get thrown back and you're like, oh. Like, that's what the majority of my media consumption is. And I've been really big on like finding really interestingly like pieced together movies. Like there's lots of kind of like genres and atmospheric type things that I enjoy consuming because I feel like it's really hard to explain. It's like if you're feeling really spooky one day and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to Timber Tombra and I'm going to watch like The Witch and I'm going to make tea and be spooky and wear lots of like draping robes. Like I feel like what I consume has a tendency to rub off on me in that way.
Mm.
And whereas before it was, I don't know, like more kids shows. So I think my personality would be affected by it a bit more. Now it's more grown up. And instead of mirroring the characters, which I found I did a lot of when I was a kid, and apparently that's just like a thing that kids do because you are like a sponge as you're growing up. You're like learning how to behave, learning what to say and how to say it, and learning how to act in certain environments. So what the media that you show your kid is not the type of kid that you're going to have, but it might be the type of kid that you're going to have for like the next couple hours. I remember I recently read a very scathing article on why Caillou is a terrible show and why that kid is just an asshole. So basically it was saying that Caillou affects, like, because children have the tendency to mirror what they see on TV, and all of Caillou's adventures consist of him whining and throwing temper tantrums and disagreeing with his parents and disagreeing with his baby sister and just like stomping around, and like apparently kids just like pick up on that, and then they're like they just are difficult because that is how you are in a situation when you don't get your way or if you're frustrated or sad. You don't say I'm frustrated or sad and like talk about your feelings. No, you just stomp and pout and slam doors and do things like that. Like, and thinking about that, I recently, because I ordered some things off of Etsy, I recently went back and started rewatching the early Sailor Moons that I was watching, oh my gosh, since I was in kindergarten. For some reason, my mom was really on board with letting me watch Sailor Moon. And Sailor Moon is, she's a very fun main character, but she's got a lot of problems. She's a huge crybaby, but not in a way that's bad, but she's not your typical like strong female lead hero, because the Sailor Moon is like this kind of weird sort of 90s feminist icon now, because it's like magical girl gang. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, man, she like doesn't do her homework. She like sleeps in a lot. She likes eating. I'm like, oh God, these are all me. And she like cries a ton, also me. And just thinking about it, I'm like, man, how much of this did I like pick up and absorb into my subconscious? Like, it just feels so weird. Like, there's very good things, like basing a lot of priority in friendships and like being kind and doing the right thing and like standing up for people that might need standing up for. I think those are all really important traits. But all of like Sailor Moon's flaws, I found funny as they're like mirrored a lot in myself. But so talking about media consumption, one thing that it kind of drives me nuts, because I've been watching a lot of older movies, especially since seeing my partner. He hasn't seen a lot of like classic 80s and 90s films, like fantasy and sci-fi. And we constantly are just kind of like, okay, eye roll, because there's either a ton of like blatant sexism, or you'll have this like kind of cool female lead, but by the end she ends up like being a big softy and getting married and having a baby, and you're like,
I'd rather she just like die. I hear. So often, death, I'm like, if she had died a hero, like that would have been a great story. But no, she had to be
Joan of Arc, Mala.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like in terms of what we consume. I mean, like from a very young age, like it's just what we're exposed to. Maybe we don't have as much choice in the matter. But I feel like as we get older, like is it that we like something, or is that we see part of ourselves in it? Like, did Sailor Moon sit really well with you? And did you really enjoy watching it as a kid because, you know, somewhere deep in your core of your being, you're like, oh, I can relate to that. I see myself in that, because that's how we, you know, that's the basis of love. Yeah. Is seeing ourself mirrored in someone else, something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I don't know. It's just interesting. It's like, do we choose what we like, or do we just find parts of ourselves in it?
Nature or nurture? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's hard to kind of pick apart because we're not thinking critically when we consume as kids. Kind of like, ooh, shiny. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Sailor Moon's got cool toys, man.
Sailor Moon had amazing toys. I wish I had some action figures that were like, they were smaller than a Barbie, but they were like this big. And they had like little outfits and stuff. I remember I had Sailor Mars, Jupiter, and Moon, maybe? I didn't have Sailor Venus or Mercury.
Nice.
But yeah, I think about that a lot because so many, I know that girls are kind of fed the idea from a very early age that you're so, like, because whenever there's a girl story involved, there's always a romance, always. And I found myself very like fixated by that, of like, oh my god, like a whirlwind romance. Like, that was this weird like fixation for me as a kid. And obviously you're a kid, like, you're, be a child, calm down. I'd still like to like go into the backyard and flip up rocks and try and look for salamanders. Like, there were two opposing forces happening there. But I think that the idea that there has to be a romance, there has to be, like, you have to find someone. What's wrong with you if you don't have a someone? Like, the people that don't have someones are always like witches that live in bogs. And being an adult now, I'm like, man, bog life doesn't sound that bad.
Bog life sounds dope.
Like, I'd live in a bog. Sign me up. You want to give me a house?
And a cauldron?
And a cauldron? Yeah. I just need a crow.
We've chatted a bit previously about this idea of leaving, you know, part of ourselves in the past or letting go of things. What do you think is worth letting go of for you?
A lot of the stuff I mentioned earlier. Like, it's not like a computer program where you just drag everything to the trash bin and then you just empty it. Like, I realize that it's something that takes a lot of hard work and sort of constant reminding myself. But I think a lot of the deep-rooted insecurities that I have from my past, like, they're not doing me any favors nowadays. Like, I realize a lot of it is based around defending myself, but I can defend myself in other ways. Like, I was gonna throw in a eulogy. Oh my god, what are words?
Analogy.
Analogy. Eulogy. What am I doing? I feel like there's worse things that can happen than someone thinking or someone not liking you. Oh well, sucks to them. I remember for the time that I was single, I went on a date with some guy and just total one-off, like, never called me back. And I kind of like felt really bummed out about it for like maybe 3 minutes. And I like went into the common room and Lucia was sitting at the table and I'm like, man, like, I feel like this guy's ghosting me. And then I just like had this like, whoop, I'm like, his loss. Like, went to the fridge and started making my dinner. I'm like, I just need to have that mentality for like 90% of the interactions that I stress about, because it's really not worth the effort of me being like, oh, if only I did something different, if only I could be a different, dainty, special person that's different. No. You're going to be who you're going to be. And if people are weirded out by that, or if they're like, no thank you, then that's their deal. They'll find people that they get along with, and I will find people that I get along with. And that's fine. That's okay.
It's like, I think it's the most incredible thing to recognize that your energy is a sacred thing. Mm-hmm. And so the energy that you spend in your spare time thinking about things that happened in real time and, you know, all of that, like whatever we give our attention to, it in some ways like shapes our reality, our existence.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. Yeah, just being able, and it's such a hard thing to be like, I'm not going to give that any more energy or space or time in my life. It's hard to know that cutting point and to really I don't know. Yeah, you just start to hold yourself a little more sacred, I think.
Yeah. Like I felt like a huge part of our adolescence, especially because nobody really prepares you for being a teenager, not really. They tell you get taller, you get body hair, you have a period, or your voice cracks, or all that stuff. They don't really prepare you for the weird mental loss of you are no longer a child. Mm. Like, physically, 9 times out of 10 mentally. It's funny because I since like everything's been in lockdown, I go to my local park a lot more because you can space yourself out from everybody. And there's a gaggle. A gaggle of teenage girls that go to the park, and I'm like, y'all are like almost fully grown human beings, and they're just being so loud and like so obnoxious. And part of me had that little like, teenagers, and then I'm like, you know what, they're babies, let them be loud, who cares. Like a spider fell down and they're like, oh my god, ah! And they're like running around like throwing their shoes. You're ridiculous. I'm like, be ridiculous. Who cares? You won't get to be as ridiculous as that when you're like, or you will. Who cares? Be a ridiculous old lady. Live in the swamp. Get a crow.
Yeah. I think there's a really beautiful thing in just letting yourself be the way that you are and not editing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's something editing
yourself. That you're someone different, or if you could be different.
Yeah, like, there's mm-hmm. something about that self-acceptance that's really empowering, and maybe it takes a while to learn, but maybe it can be taught. Which leads me to, do you think that we have a choice in how our personality develops, or is it just a weird concoction of exposure and experience?
I think it's a little bit of both, because I'm finding now that I'm trying to sort of like guide and shape the person who I'm becoming. Whereas when you are a kid or a teenager, you're just kind of doing it without analyzing or thinking about it. Or at least that was the case for us, I felt. Maybe kids nowadays with the internet and being self-aware and stuff, maybe they're doing a little bit more work on themselves, which is amazing. Props to them. But I feel like it is a mixture of the two, because based on what I was exposed to and how I was raised and the friendships that I had, I know what I want, and I know what I don't want. Like, I know who I want to become, and then I know the kind of person that I don't want to become. And if I, like, there's been moments where I've caught myself, like, disciplining, like, my parents, or, like, doing, like, something catty, like a friend that I wasn't super keen on, and being like, oh, God. And then kind of taking a step back to like reflect on it, and then going in and being like, I'm really sorry that I just did that. Or like, I find the biggest thing that I've been doing, especially with my teaching methods, is if I lose my cool around a kid, I apologize. Always. Like, I found that, like, a lot of the authority figures that I had, if they lost their cool around a kid, they would never apologize. For some reason, it feels like giving someone the high ground is apologizing, is like kind of tucking your tail between your legs and being like, oh, I'm sorry. But no, like, showing and explaining. Like, there's been times where I've been super stressed out and just one kid says something that I'm like, look, I just can't deal with this right now. And then I'm like, okay, like, you didn't need to be that harsh. And then finding the time to, like, go to that kid and be like, look, I'm sorry I raised my voice at you earlier. I had, like, 5 people asking me to do things all at the same time. I was kind of stressed out and I didn't mean to lose my cool. I'm sorry. It's treating people like people, even little people, like treating children like the adults that they are going to be, because they should be expecting that. That is the bare minimum. If someone shouted at me or lost their cool with me as an adult, I would be like expecting an apology. Mm-hmm. And then when they don't give it, it's kind of like, oh, okay. I'm not really sure how to articulate that feeling, but I feel like we should start giving that to kids at an earlier age. Because nine times out of ten, like, I don't feel like, oh, they deserved that talking to, or they deserved that yelling.
Mm.
Like, no, that's just gonna cause more trauma. We don't need to keep that cycle going.
Like, yeah, it's hard not to repeat, like, the way that you were taught or the way that other people were with you as kids. So it's I think it's got a lot of power to recognize that and to address it. And
for sure,
kids understand so much more than we think that they do. They are little sponges. They're gonna absorb that, whether it's Sailor Moon fighting evil or, you know, an adult that they admire being an empathetic human and talking to them like an adult. Like, that's all gonna have some effect on them. And, you know, it's not to say that kids don't, like, you're always gonna have negative experiences, but in that scope where you can see that adults are humans. Because I think, like, we start out really young and we have this glorified idea of an adult, like, oh, when I get to be 28, I'm gonna know what I'm doing with my life and I'm gonna, you know, be, you know, this certain type of adult, because that's the experience, you know, that you grow up seeing, and, you know, this is what I'm gonna be like, and I'm gonna have it all together, and I'm not gonna be this ball of emotions. And that's this year.
Yeah.
And you know what, like, we're always going to be kids. So instead of, like, separating again this binary idea of, like, this is when you're a kid, this is when you're an adult, and those lines get blurry, you know, as you're going through teenagehood, it's because the line doesn't exist.
The limit does not exist.
We're always kids. We are always kids, because we're just kids that got bigger. And in the same way, like, you know, we have to treat ourselves as such, I think, and be really gentle with ourselves and have that same empathy of being like, oh, wow, like, I just acted like a version of myself that either I don't want to be or doesn't feel authentic to me, and to recognize that and then address it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. It's like, a lot of this has been about, like, breaking different
it's so loud.
Okay, I know. He's getting his microphone.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Oh, I thought it was your upstairs neighbors.
No. That was just your side door.
Hi, Callum.
It's okay. Anyway, what was I saying? Stuff that we carry on from childhood. Trying to sift through that, like, what do you want to keep? What don't you want to keep? Like, I find that a huge part of, like, especially with, like, pandemic mania happening and being, like, stuck inside, that a lot of the relationship I have with my partner is based around play. And it's almost like going back into being a kid. Like, there's, we designate time in the evening for us to, like, play Pokemon on Game Boy. or like, we'll, like, make silly little games and, like, do funny little voices. And, like, it's not all the time, but it's, like, enough so that it just, like, feels funny. Like, feels, there's an element of play in my life again, where a lot of time I find that, like, when I'm working 9 to 5 every single day, there's no space and there's no energy for me to go back into that, like, playful, like, making up silly games or telling funny stories or making really stupid jokes. Like, there's no time and there's no energy for that because I spend all day being the adult authority figure, make sure everybody does the thing on time, and then everybody leaves, and then I'm like, okay, I gotta go through my list of things to do in the studio, like make sure the pottery gets fired and make sure that the lessons are prepped for the next day. And then I go home and then I make my dinner and I go through the, like, boom, 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 boom. And unless it's a day off where I do not have anything to do, I don't have time for play. Play doesn't happen. My escape from the day to day is how I listen to music or when I get to make art and I get to make fun stuff. But even then, I've gotten away from making, like, art being a playful experimentation where it's like, no, art has a goal now. I want to try and do this. I want to try and improve this element of my art or take it to this level of production value that I think it should be. And then there's the whole other layer of when you are making something, like turning it into a commodity that hopefully it can make some money. Thinking about branding and thinking about imaging and how am I going to frame this so that more people can see it. It's blah, 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 blah. Like, the fun gets sucked out of it. To a certain degree, like, I still love painting because I have like almost an out-of-body experience where I'm just kind of like sitting back and enjoying making these, like, patterns on the canvas. But then the after part comes of, like, I gotta get this picture right, like, I'm gonna get another lamp from the kitchen, make sure that the lighting's right, like, and the element of play and that being something that just disappears when you become an adult and you become a grown-up, that doesn't sound fun, getting rid of the play of existence.
Yeah, man.
Like, being goofy is one of my favorite adjectives to be.
And it's amazing how much energy playing actually reintroduces back into your life.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you make it a priority, when you make space for it, I think that, you know, I mean, in normal air quotes time, you know, like, we feel like we don't have anything left to give when we're giving all of our attention and all of our energy to different things. And it's funny that when you make space for play, I genuinely think that you get some of that energy back. And then it just carries through into everything that you do. And suddenly, you know, a lot of things are more fun than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you want to end off on? Any kind of ideas that are still rolling around in your brain?
One thing I just want to talk about is, like we kind of touched on it a bit earlier, of us having the idea of that there's a finish line to being, to growing up and being a proper adult. And sometimes, like, if we are sort of raised in this very, like, heteronormative white picket fence idea of, like, getting married, having kids, buying a house, getting a dog, getting a job, saving for retirement, go on a vacation every year, like, that doesn't exist. Like, that doesn't exist for everybody. Not everybody's doing that. Like, but for some reason, there's this expectation when you're a kid, based on what you consume, double tie-in, based on what you consume and the kind of things that we see on TV and read about in books, you kind of expect this thing to happen. And then the economy's in the toilet and the housing market's insane. And you're like, oh, wow, I don't think I can afford a house right now. Like, that's not going to happen. Wherever. Like, not everybody's going to be in that position. And I, like, sorry, to sort of divert? Oh, my God. Anyway. To sort of change topic again, like having adequate representation of different lifestyles, different people, different environments is so important. Like, everybody likes to, like, shit the bed about some character having their race changed or gender changed or sexual identity changed. But I had this weird epiphany when I was watching a documentary about Dungeons and Dragons art. And it was talking about the art that was being made when the game first came out, like back in the, like, late 70s, early 80s. And there was this one particular artist that if there was a scene to be painted that had women in it, he always grabbed it up. And he always painted the women as that classic, like, imagine a fantasy woman from the 80s. What you are imagining there, like this, like, super buff, like, big chested, like, little metal chainmail bikini with a big sword and maybe like a dragon on her shoulder or something like that. That's it. And it was interesting because they had a creator who works for Wizards of the Coast, which owns Dungeons and Dragons. And they were saying, like, I remember seeing this and not even thinking that it's wrong because it's not. And I thought about that for a second because I was like, it's not even wrong because it's not. And I'm like, you know, you're right. It's just like people, like, when it turns into sides, when it turns into an us versus them. So take the metal bikini clad lady, and then take, like, a fully armored lady that is wearing, like, cool chainmail with, like, a full armor plate, and she's got, like, a helmet and, like, a spear or something. Both are valid. Like, both are okay, but mm-hmm. when one becomes the dominant storyline, when it becomes, like, none of the, like, fully clothed, fully armored, blah, blah, blah characters exist, they're all bikini women, then it becomes, like, oh, God, this, like, tired, sexist, okay, for, like, the male gaze, because it was a male artist making it for these predominantly like nerdy white guys. And they're all like teenagers too, so they gotta make her hot. Like, if you wanted to have like a warlock spellcaster that has like a cool, like super skimpy outfit, that's totally fine. But that shouldn't be the only choice for everybody. Just like it shouldn't be like, oh, all of the characters have to be white. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different options, and it's not erasing like white characters, which white supremacists seem to get up in arms with. They're like, oh, like, why are you trying to get rid of us? Like, no, but you're not the only option. Take a seat. Let the other people go. Like, come on. You're still here. Fuck. Like, yeah. Diversity, man. of everything. Diversify everything. Sarah?
I mean, that's the goal, right? Of having spaces and art and podcasts and music and, you know, just why does it all have to be homogenized? Why is the family with the white picket fence and the dog and the 1 year vacation, like, why is that what's considered normal?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we're at a point in our lives where we get to be really analytical about that and to really criticize it and to be able to examine it and be like, yes, that works for some people, but it doesn't work for everyone. And there's different, happiness looks different for each individual person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just being conscious that to create, like, we're now in a position where we can create that representation,
mm-hmm.
which feels a little bit more powerful, I think, than we're not just passively absorbing content all the time as a painter, as a creator,
mm-hmm.
you know, we, and as a teacher, we have that opportunity to just be all encompassing and fluid. And
mm-hmm.
one day I'm gonna, you know, wear boxers and an old painty jumper, and the next day I'm gonna put on a full face of makeup and put on a dress, like, you know. And it's, and one day I'm gonna lay in the garden and finger paint and drink orange juice and look at bugs, and the next day I'm gonna be a boss ass bitch and go sell some art, or, you know, do mm-hmm. something that adults, what do adults do? Go grocery shopping
all the time,
you know. So I think we're in a position now where we create fluidity, and we create our own version of ourselves in the world,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you so much for
having me,
for talking and being so open.
A lot.
No, that's, don't apologize.
That's another thing. Don't apologize for saying too much or taking up too much space.
Yeah.
Your girl has ADD, and it can be sometimes hard to get from down here to up here without going all over the place first.
It's good though. I like it. That's how my brain works.
Yeah.
Would you be open to doing like a really short tarot reading?
Of course. I know
Shannon is all into all good things witchy and lovely and spooky, and this feels like a really nice space to honor that. And
I am very, very excited to do this. I'm a little nervous as well. Also because my method of reading is, well, I mean, if you've gotten this far, you can guess how my reading is going to be. I'm not just gonna switch and be like all like, ah, yes, like the cards tell me this for you, Sarah. What is this reading going to pertain to in particular, just to give it a sense of direction? Do you want it to be about you? Do you want it to be about your future?
Let's go future self. That feels like a good place future to say. Maybe just kind of with the intention. Maybe like how do I honor the other people in my life? I've been feeling a lot of like self-importance and ego lately. And so, yeah, I feel like that's a good place to
start. I really like that question. Sorry, and just to reiterate, it's
that's okay. How do I honor the other people in my life?
Honor, that was the key word I was missing. Mm-hmm. So how do I honor the other people in my life? So I'm going to give these. So the cards that I'm using today are, this is the first deck that I got, and it is my favorite. I have like two other ones, but it's the Golden Deck by Cat Black. And it is it's like a series of collaged works that use medieval and Renaissance art. It's very, like, very, very similar in layout to the Rider-Waite deck, just in terms of, like, how characters are placed and the environments which they sit in. One of my other decks that I have, which is an Art Nouveau one, is very beautiful, but I find that it can be very, very hard to interpret.
Mm.
Just because I'm, like, not super duper confident in my skills. Like, it's 50-50. It's like my skill with barroom games. I'm either really good at pool or I'm absolutely terrible. Like, sinking shots. I got no business sinking. And sometimes spreads are, like, incredibly uncanny. And really tearing me a new one. And then other times I'm like, what is going on? This doesn't make sense. Why do I have like four pages in a row? What's happening? I'm just really inexperienced. Okay. I don't think there's a way that I can do this that you could see. Oh, there we go. Let's get that hair tied out of the way. All right, you get to see my knees. So I'm going to place them like this. Because I have the tendency to not know what I'm doing, I don't deal in reversals unless they pop up by some strange circumstance. Okay, so this is your standard horseshoe spread, and we are asking how to honor the people we love in our life. So let's flip the card at the bottom to see what we are dealing with for the overarching sort of theme. We've got the Knight of Swords. Okay, so you are taking some clear action in your life. Like, you're still a little bit nervous. You don't like fully have a handle, but I mean, considering the talk that we just had, this is very befitting. The Knight of Swords, as we all know, is kind of like, he's a man of action. Like, look at man or woman of action. I'll hold up the card so you can see it a little bit better. But it's this guy on a horse. He's like, so the dragon's like, crap, down at the bottom. So yeah, this is kind of like a nice one to have to kind of set the tone for the rest of the spread. Because this is a person who gets shit done. Obviously not as like proficient as like say a king, but he's definitely not a page. He's not like a young little newbie that's just starting out fresh. He's got some skills, he's got a handle on things. And so in terms of honoring those in your life that you love, I would say, yeah, this is a good card to have. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not going to read too much into this one card. I usually just try and
Yeah, because the other ones will kind of make it clear.
The other ones will kind of help us figure out what's happening.
Mm. It feels like a nice place to start, though, like taking action, yeah, but not being too sure what you're doing. Sounds pretty all-encompassing to me.
Yeah, yeah. Very befitting of the talk we just had.
Mm.
Okay, so first up we have your past. And in the past we have the Four of Wands. Mm. Got like a nice little scene. We got some ladies doing the washing up in front. You got some party people happening in the back, and you got some fruit hanging overhead. So in terms of your past, you feel very connected to, like, wanting to honor and have space for those that you love and those that you care about. Like, comes from a place in your past where you do feel really connected to those around you, and you do, like, long for and crave that sort of societal connection, whether it's through a community or through a tight group of friends. Like, you really, really cherish those values of having a good sense of camaraderie. All right, next one. You feel guilty.
Oh, shit.
It's gonna get real.
Look at you're stealing. Sorry, this one went straight for the throat, man. Like, so this is the Seven of Swords, and this guy's stealing a bunch of shit in the dead of night. Like, a lot of times this is a card about feeling, oh, let's see all my stuff on the inside table. This is a card about feeling kind of guilty, about feeling like you're taking something that you shouldn't. Yeah, this is a guilt card. This is also in the present position. So the act of wanting to honor your friends and loved ones maybe comes from a place of feeling like you haven't been doing that lately. Feeling like you've maybe been a bit more withdrawn, or like a bit more into the self, like you were saying. So yeah, there's that guy. Okay. Next up, we have hidden influences, so things that you may or may not be aware of. The Ace of Wands. This is nice. This is a good card for you. So this is pertaining to sort of like what's cooking on the back burner. And the Ace of Wands is like idea and inspiration in the purest form. So this is really you taking that initiative and taking the initiative to be inspired by those around you and sort of like learning from other people that you see like really like honoring and connecting and being connected to those around them. And sort of wanting to do the same, wanting to sort of like take that step to be as connected and to feel that sort of like all-encompassing love in the feeling of being a part of a community. So next is friends and family. So this is the Page of Coins. So you're starting to invest time and energy into this, and maybe you've been feeling a little apprehensive because maybe you're feeling a bit spread thin. The Knight of Swords is known for being a very kind of like active go-getter. He's got a lot of shit on the go, so feeling like you might not have the energy to put forth into sustaining and sort of watering the garden of all of these friendships and relationships that you have, because it might seem like a bit too much. So the Page of Coins is kind of like the first little starter step to putting the energy into these good relationships that you have with your friends and your family. So don't be scared, just take baby steps, like it's gonna be okay. And then the next two cards are where you're going and how you're going to get there. Depending on how these two cards go, I might draw a third one, but if it's super clear, then I just won't, because then it can get bogged down with too much meaning. So, Okay. I don't actually pull this card very often. I'm going to be a little noob cake and...
Which card is it?
It's the Three of Coins.
What's going on in it?
It's building and maintaining. I just want to take a gander at its meaning. Like, you don't always want to go from the book too hard, because a lot of it pertains to your particular situation and your question. But I just like a little bit of backstory to get a figure on what I'm doing. Yeah, it's the Three of Coins. Yeah. That's good. This is actually really fitting for you and Tom. So, this is kind of like, this is kind of the benefits of hard work. It's not necessarily, like you're working on a creative endeavor or creative pursuit. Like, I know that there's I think it's the Eight of Coins. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's another coins card that's all about kind of like creating for sort of like craftsmanship. Like for me, that would mean like art. For you, that would mean like doing comics, doing these podcasts, that kind of thing. This is more like setting up a foundation for your life. So in terms of honoring and loving those around you, this shows that that is a very, very good step to setting up the foundation for a happy life for you. Like, it's only gonna help make those bonds stronger. It's like, it might be something that's a little scary or you might not be sure about it, but it's a really good way to set up a good foundation. Also, I know that you and Tom are like doing renovations, and this is like a little renovation card.
That's quite funny, yeah.
Yeah. So they're like redoing like a church wall or something in this. And how you're gonna get there, oh my god. It's not gonna be easy, I'm sorry.
Oh no.
You got the Ten of Swords.
So I'm being
there's
stabbed to death in this card.
You're gonna move to Arizona and get attacked by a dog and got by a bunch of swords. I'm so sorry. The Ten of Swords isn't always bad though. Like, even any of the cards can have a negative and a positive spin to it. So this one is kind of like there's a lot of anxiety to it, and there's a lot of kind of like feeling helpless or like you don't have control over a situation. Like maybe some unpleasant conversations are going to be had as the result of this. Like, I know with fortifying any relationship, you kind of have to like go through the good and the bad. You can't just be sunshine and butterflies all the time. But this card is telling me that you kind of have to sift through the scary, muddy waters before you can sort of delve into the happy, like, it's almost like when you go through the rapids on a kayak trip and then you reach the calm afterwards. Like these two cards paired together tells me that some unpleasant stuff might happen, but you're setting up the foundation for a better future. And check your house for asbestos.
Oh,
I'm kidding about this.
No, it's good. It's like lay the groundwork, but do the hard stuff. And
yeah.
Maybe the sword card of stabbing, it has something to do with the death of ego as well.
Yeah.
Or at least the
stab your ego multiple times.
Yeah.
Set a large black dog on it.
Fair enough. Oh, thank you so much. I love when you do readings for me, because a lot of the times when we talk, like, we don't have that much lead up into, like, you know, all of the complicated intricacies that are going on in our outside lives. And they're always just so true and so fitting. And I always just am like, oh God, this is so real and so fits like every aspect. And I just love the like matter of fact and just the way that you explain the cards. It really.
Yeah. I do it more like I'm having a conversation, because that's how I feel about tarot, is that it is a conversation between you and another person, or you and yourself. And the cards are just acting as kind of like a mediator, giving you prompts to kind of analyze and self-reflect, which is what I really, really like about them. And there's cool pictures.
Is there anything that you'd like to plug at the end of this episode?
Oh my gosh. I'm an artist. I do art stuff. I will paint you a flying tiger shooting flames out of its mouth.
How do people find you?
How do people find me? Under a rock somewhere. No.
In a bog.
In a bog with a crow. Your local bog woman has an Instagram. You can search up Shannon Lee MacDi. That's SHANNONLEIGHMACD. You'll see a very posh picture of myself like this. And you can see my art there, and maybe send me a message if you would like some art done by me.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I love you so much. Oh my gosh. You live on the other side of the country, and it makes me kind of sad, but at the same time, I'm very happy that we can just call each other up, and I'm like, yeah, Sarah is in the room next to me, it's fine.
Yeah, if it doesn't feel like that much distance when we get to have conversations like this and hold space for each other. And mm-hmm. Like I like that we call each other when we're doing, you're one of those people that I can call while I'm doing other things, like cooking dinner or washing the dishes, yeah, or whatever. And like it doesn't feel like I have to separate myself from my life in order to include you in it, even digitally, which I think is really lovely.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just appreciate you and your whole being and everything you are and everything you create. And you continue to inspire me, so keep creating stuff so I can consume your media.
I want to make more media going forward. I'm starting up again. I'm gonna be making more pottery, get excited about it. Woo!
Yippee. Nice. Oh man, I just feel so much love for you.